You are listening to The Astrocast. Welcome to The Astrocast. My name is Rue. Thank you for joining me today. This is a new podcast that I'm starting because I have noticed a distinct lack of astrophotography-related podcasts on the market today, and I really wanted to bring something that I would truly enjoy to hear and that I know a lot of people that I talk with and work with on a regular basis would also really enjoy to hear. So that's why I'm here today. Just to give you my background, I'm a big fan of the Jodcast. I used to listen to that, you know, every episode that came out, but about a year ago, they stopped recording, and all I could find online was, you know, 5 or 10 minute quick podcast telling you about what was in the night sky for any given week. And while I love those, they weren't scratching the itch that I was going for, and nothing was. So here I am, and I've decided to make my own. So thanks for joining me. Let's go ahead and get started. So what's the plan in this podcast? What are we going to talk about? Well, I got a few different ideas for things that I think people would enjoy talking about and listening to. You know, I'm hoping to do this on a weekly basis, first of all. So I'm planning on doing a weekly release of episodes. So if that's something you might be interested in, please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast and feel free to share it with anyone that you know that may have a similar interest. As far as myself, my name is Christopher Page, but I do go by Rue, and that's how you will hear me referred to more than likely all the time in this show. I am from Charlotte, North Carolina, originally. Actually, one of the few locals from Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been born and raised here. I grew up out in the country in a town called Mint Hill, just outside of Charlotte. Very dark skies out there when I was a little boy. Unfortunately, I did not really think to look up. I can remember some incredible sights from my childhood, though, in the sky nonetheless. I was witness to the incredible 2001 Leonids meteor storm out in those same Bortle 3 sites. Nowadays, it's a Bortle 5, borderline 6, depending on where you are in that part of town. But again, I grew up there, so from very early on, I had a immense interest in the night sky. And like I'm sure many of you, when the pandemic happened and I wasn't able to get out as often and, you know, needed to spend more time at home or by myself or with my wife, for that matter, that's when I started to really get into astronomy. I can't remember exactly what I stumbled across. I had been into photography for quite some time. I actually had bought my wife a Canon Rebel T5 as a Christmas gift one year. And she wasn't really that big into it as much as I'd hoped she would be. And I occasionally would take photos of things here and there. I remember taking a few lunar shots early on and looking at them and being like, wow, this is really cool. But I didn't really get into the hobby until about, you know, 2020, after the pandemic started. I went online and started searching and found astrophotography and just was blown away by how cool it was. So, of course, I ran out immediately and bought the wrong telescope, which is, you know, a great mistake that a lot of new astronomers make. And maybe perhaps we can prevent just one person from making that same mistake by listening to this podcast. So the first topic that I am planning on covering today is going to be what is a great setup for a first time astrophotographer. So there are a whole lot of people that are new to this hobby nowadays, and I just thought it would be a good topic to cover. There's lots of videos on YouTube, but I know that there's some folks who just don't like watching YouTube. So perhaps one person will hear this and it will help them out. So that's what we're going to cover. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be right back with you and we'll get started. All right, so beginner astrophotography setups. This is the most common question that I see online as far as the Facebook groups that I'm a member of. You see a lot of people out there taking, you know, long exposure photos with their iPhones or their Google Pixels or whatever they have their hands on. And the next logical question if you get, you know, Andromeda or the Orion Nebula in a shot is where do I go from here? So there's two different routes that we're going to talk about that you can take, one that I'm a big fan of and one that I am not such a big fan of, but it's not necessarily about, you know, what I think is right and wrong. But I just want to give people all their available options. So there's two different categories that we're going to start by discussing. The first category, which I will admit will be briefer. I'm not going to dive quite as deep on this because it's not my recommended category, but I still want to give all options, is going to be smart telescopes. So these are newer telescopes that haven't been on the market quite as long, but they basically fully integrate every tool that you need into one low price package that can kind of do it all as far as, you know, tracking the night sky, taking the long exposure photos, stacking them together. Everything that you absolutely, you know, need to do is combined into one package that is, you know, at a very affordable price when compared to building your own custom rig for astrophotography. Now, the caveat there is that the quality is not nearly as good as what you would get with even a lower cost astrophotography rig. Can you get really cool pictures that, you know, you can post to Instagram or Facebook and share with your family and friends? Absolutely, you can do that. Are you going to get something that you'd want to print on a, you know, A3 plus 13 by 19 gallery print style portrait photograph? Probably not. So there is a bit of a delta there. And the reason that I don't recommend these necessarily as beginner telescopes is because as a beginner, I feel like one of the most important things that you need to learn are the fundamentals of astronomy. And unfortunately, smart telescopes automate the experience so much that you really don't learn anything. You basically just say, this is what I want to take a picture of, and it does the rest. If that's all you're after, then it's a great option. If all you want to do is say, I want a pretty picture of Andromeda, a smart telescope is going to get you there the cheapest and fastest, no questions asked. But if you want to get, you know, a look behind the curtain and kind of understand how the night sky works and, you know, track objects and learn constellations and, you know, have a deeper dive, then I would recommend avoiding the smart telescopes. So, we're going to get a little bit deeper when we come back into the smart telescopes, and then we're going to jump over to category two shortly after that. So thanks for listening. I'll be right back with you. Welcome back to the AstroCast. This is Rue. Thanks for listening. Now we're going to get back into smart telescopes. So I was explaining before the break that, you know, a smart telescope is an excellent tool for somebody who is not necessarily interested in learning the, you know, intricate workings of the night sky. Maybe they don't want to, you know, learn what a polar alignment is and learn, you know, the North Star and different constellations. But all they want to do basically is, you know, spend as little money as possible to get a cool picture. And if that's the case, then, you know, that is absolutely what a smart telescope is made to do. So with that being said, I'm going to make one recommendation for smart telescopes, because right now in the market as it exists today, I think there really is only one choice that is worth making, and that's going to be the ZWO C-Star S50 smart telescope. Now, this runs about $499 US. And the reason I think it's the only choice is several other smart telescopes beat ZWO to the market. However, they're all much more expensive, and honestly, the software that ZWO makes, which is a whole different topic, is just so user-friendly that I couldn't really recommend a more expensive smart telescope that can't do the job quite as well as the S50. I have not gotten hands-on with one of these devices yet, but I have watched many reviews online. I've watched Quiv the Lazy Geek. You know, he's done extensive reviews on it, as well as some others, like I think Astro Backyard did a video as well. I think for what it is, it's a really great scope, and I love the fact that its barrier to entry is so low, because I do think that there is a little bit of, you know, a price I don't think there is definitely a price issue with astrophotography in terms of it not being accessible to the masses because it is so expensive. I consider myself to be pretty well off, and I had a hard time putting together, my first rig because it is very, very expensive. And even the C-Star being a, you know, entry level piece of kit, is still $500, which is by no means a small amount. That's, you know, significantly more expensive than most new gaming consoles nowadays. So, with that being said, I do think it is an excellent value for the money. You're getting a whole lot of awesome tools built into one small package that's very affordable and cost efficient when compared to, you know, a custom built rig with its own equatorial mount and its own telescope, etc. So value for the money, they're going to be number one. You can't beat a smart telescope as far as value for money is concerned. Where they fall short, however, is the overall quality. Unfortunately, with the sensor being as small as it is, the focal length being, well, the focal length isn't such a problem, but the aperture of the overall scope and the small sensor, you know, that being a smartphone sensor, essentially, it just leaves a lot to be desired as far as quality is concerned. I have seen some, you know, really cool looking photos come out of the C-Star. It's not to say that you can't get cool photos with it. You absolutely can. But again, if you wanted to print out a really large photo and hang it up on your living room wall, you wouldn't want to do it with a C-Star because the resolution is just not going to be there. So that would be my recommendation for a smart telescope. Again, if you're somebody who wants to stick their foot in the water, but they're not really sure how deep they want to go, but you want to get cool looking pictures, C-Star S50 is going to be my recommendation for you. So when we come back from the break, we're going to get into the meat of the story, if you will, and we're going to talk about custom-built rigs with equatorial go-to mounts. Thanks for listening, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to the AstroCast. I'm your host, Drew, and we are talking about beginner setups for astrophotography. Prior to the break, we were covering the C-Star S50, which is a smart telescope from the company ZWO, which has really stormed onto the scene in the last few years with all of their pretty cool products. They do, you know, it's a divisive company. It seems like it's a love it or hate it situation with most people. You're either in the camp of, you know, I love Nina or XYZ Linux program, or I love ASI Air. And I'm in the latter group, but I have used Nina quite a bit extensively. After I got my ASI Air, though, I will admit I haven't been using Nina as much. In the future, when I build my observatory, I am absolutely going to have Nina run it, and I will not be using the ASI Air. But for my current setup, which is basically moving my, you know, rig from the garage out into the front yard and occasionally down to the observatory here, the ASI Air is just so convenient that that's what I go for. So with that being said, though, let's go ahead and start talking about a homemade custom astrophotography rig and what is needed to build one. So when someone tells you about their rig, they're referring to a combination of various, you know, astrophotography tools that we put together to make a rig. You hear the term rig thrown around with, you know, PCs a lot. People build their rigs, you know, and that's their computer. Well, us astronomers build our astrophotography rigs, and they are extremely customizable. So, you know, whatever you're into as far as astronomy is concerned, really the sky's the limit as far as what you want, colors, parts, you know, size of telescope. You can spend very little or you can spend a lot on almost any of these tools that goes into making a rig. But I figured I would start today with just a simple beginner's rig. What goes into it, how much it costs roughly, and what kind of results you could expect to get out of such of a rig. So the first thing that anyone will tell you is the mount is the most important thing about your rig. And this is 100% true. This is not opinion. It's subjective. It starts with your mount. So if you ever, you know, see someone asking, you know, hey, I wanted to get into astrophotography. What kind of telescope should I get? They're asking the wrong question, because frankly, you can use any kind of, well, not any kind of telescope, but there are a lot of different telescopes that you can use for astrophotography. But if you're not thinking about your mount first and foremost, then you're likely not going to get the right telescope. So as far as entry level equatorial mounts are concerned, there are quite a few good ones on the market today. I personally like the Skywatcher SAGTI, Star Adventure GTI. I actually purchased one of these myself last summer when I was building a more small portable rig that I could, you know, quickly carry around. There's some advantages that are huge to, you know, something like this. It's got a lower capacity, so you can't put quite as much weight on it as you can some of the bigger mounts that we'll talk about. But the advantage is obviously that it's a lot lower cost. So for about $600, you can get a Star Adventure GTI, which is going to do everything you need to do as far as, you know, be a great equatorial mount. And let me just explain briefly what an equatorial mount is. So equatorial mount is the type of tripod mount, if you will, that our telescopes sit on. And there are two different types that are used in astronomy, actually more than two. But for our purposes, we're going to talk about the alt-az mount and the equatorial mount. So an alt-az mount is simply put a directional mount. You can go up, down, left, and right with it. This is great for visual use. So if you wanted to just look through an eyepiece and, you know, look at the planets and that sort of thing, an alt-az mount is great because you don't need for the mount to rotate in the same way that the Earth rotates to track objects. You don't have to worry about that because you're just looking at the object with your eye. You're not taking a long photography exposure of the object. Whereas an equatorial mount rides on two different axes. You have your right ascension axis and then your declination axis. And the most important of the two is that right ascension axis. And what that does is it actually allows your telescope to rotate in the exact same motion that our planet rotates. And in this way, we can actually track the night sky with that mount. So the other axis declination is also important, but if you buy just a simple star tracker, oftentimes it will only have a right ascension axis on it, and that is what is ultimately critical in an equatorial mount, whereas a declination axis is good to have for guiding purposes, which is something we'll get into later, but not necessarily a must-have to take, you know, deep sky photography. So whenever you hear, you know, the term equatorial mount, a lot of different mounts come to mind these days. I personally own two equatorial mounts. I own the aforementioned Star Adventure GTI, and then I also own an iOptron CEM26. Now, price-wise, they're going to vary quite a bit. The lower end is going to be like your star tracker. So you can get one of those for $300 or $400. They're very simple. They're great if you just want to put a camera on it, on a, you know, decent tripod and take, you know, 30 second to sometimes as high as 2 or 3 minutes, depending on your polar alignment exposures. But generally, you know, a shorter length exposure, like 30 seconds with a star tracker, all the way up to your actual equatorial go-to mounts, which will start on the low end with a Star Adventure GTI. That's about $600 with a tripod, and then you can go up to $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, even $10,000 and more for your equatorial mount, depending on, you know, how much of a payload you require. The most popular equatorial mounts on the market today are likely ZWO's AM3 and AM5 mounts. These are relatively new. They are what's called a harmonic drive mount, so they do not require a counterweight to balance your scope, and you don't have to actually manually balance your scope, as in moving it up and down on the declination axis and, you know, moving a counterweight up and down on the right ascension axis. to get everything perfectly balanced. So if I were new in building a rig, what I would absolutely recommend would probably be the AM3 or the AM5 if the money were available. If it weren't and I wanted to start smaller and with a lower budget, I would go for a Star Adventure GTI. If I was somewhere in the middle of the two, I didn't necessarily have the, you know, $2,500 or whatever the AM5 is going for, but I wanted something that could handle a little more weight than the 11 pounds that the GTI is capable of, I would probably recommend looking into something like an HEQ5 Pro, I believe it is, or what I have, which is a CEM26. I personally love the CEM26. I think it's been an excellent mount. I believe I paid around $1,500 for it, and that was with the tripod. And I've heard people say iOptron makes low quality stuff, but honestly, the CM26 is so well built, and I've been kind of blown away with the quality of it. It's super silent. It's buttery smooth when the axes are unlocked. So some people actually have trouble balancing it because it's so smooth and frictionless, which is something I learned about more recently, because I just figured all mounts were like that until I got my GTI, and it was super tight when I was rotating that right ascension axis. But anyway, so different mounts. You have to have an equatorial mount. If I was, you know, $700, that Star Adventure GTI. $1,500, CEM26. $2,500, AM5. For a few hundred less, you can get the AM3. It's got a, you know, a lower payload capacity. I don't know why anyone would buy the AM3, because for like $300 more, you can get the AM5, and it's just so much more capable. So I don't know why people buy those, if they do. But that would probably be my recommendation. Now, you can always buy a used equatorial mount. I have not purchased a used equatorial mount in the past, so I'm not going to speak to that. However, if that's something that you wanted to look into, you could certainly go on many different websites that sell used equipment. I can heartily endorse Cloudy Nights, which is an awesome website for astrophotography and astronomy alike. They have a really great classified section where, you know, people sell their gear and you can see if they've sold to someone before and check their rating and those sorts of things. I have purchased something myself on Cloudy Nights before, and I was very successful in doing that. So if you're looking for used gear, I would say check them out. I believe High Point Scientific also does some excellent used gear as well, but probably not as much of a selection as a classified section has. And we will have to get into stores too, because, you know, a lot of new people will go on Amazon or eBay, God forbid, looking for telescopes, and that is not where you want to shop when it comes to shopping for gear. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about where you could purchase one of those three mounts that we talked about, and then we'll head on into telescopes after that. So thanks for listening. I'm Rue. You're listening to the Astrocast, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Astrocast. This is your host, Rue. Thank you for tuning in again today with us for our inaugural episode, episode one of the Astrocast. Today we're discussing building a new rig as a beginner to astrophotography. Before the break, we were discussing which equatorial mounts would be a good start depending on your budget. And I just wanted to briefly touch on what stores someone who's, you know, new to this hobby can go to shop at. There has been changes over, you know, the last couple of years, obviously with COVID happening and everything, you know, stores change, some come, some go. But I'm going to recommend a couple today that I've bought, several products from, nearly all of them, in fact, over the past few years, and I've had nothing but success with them. So High Point Scientific would be the first one that I can definitely recommend. They have excellent customer service, good return policy. If you have any questions, you can call them and they will be patient and sit on the phone with you and answer them. And then the other would be Adorama. Now, I don't have as much experience with Adorama's customer service department. I've never had to deal with that. But they do have a good selection of gear, and everything I bought from them have shown up very quickly, 2 or 3 days and it's here. So I've had good luck with them as well. So those are the two stores I would recommend. I do not recommend going to Amazon to buy your astronomy gear. And I definitely do not recommend going to eBay to buy any kind of telescope or telescope related items. Do not waste your money. It's not worth it. You're going to see these budget brand Chinese knockoff telescopes that are just no good. And I know that we get a lot of our telescope stuff from China. I'm not insulting Chinese manufacturing by any means. Half the stuff that's on my current rig is made in China. But when I say that, I just mean cheap knockoff scopes. So that's the kind of stuff you want to avoid. If you don't shop on Amazon or eBay, you will avoid that. So I don't think I've seen any products on High Point Scientific that I wouldn't recommend to somebody. And they have, you know, the whole wide range of what you could possibly need. So just to recap the prior segment, as far as equatorial mounts are concerned, I recommended 3 different mounts depending on your budget. I did want to briefly touch on star trackers. I know I kind of mentioned that before. You have a star tracker is basically a very simple tool for taking, you know, long exposure photography of the night sky. You could rig it up with a small telescope. What most people do with the star tracker is they just connect their DSLR camera to it with generally a wide field lens to do something like Milky Way photography. That's not to say you can't put a, you know, 200 millimeter prime lens on a star tracker. You can. You just have to really nail the polar alignment if you're going to go that route. You can get one of those for even less than an equatorial mount, you know, $300-$400. I have a Skyguider Pro that I use for wide field stuff occasionally, and I love it. It's great. It's so simple. It has an internal battery, and it takes all of 2 minutes to set up, you know, put it on my tripod, do a really quick polar alignment through the built-in polar scope, and Bob's your uncle. So definitely like the Skyguider as well. So now on to our next topic, which is telescopes. So opinions are going to vary, but I'm going to recommend what I think is a great telescope for a beginner in astronomy. And I don't even have to recommend a specific, you know, make or model here, because there are so many of them available. You really can, you know, find what you like and what works in your budget. And as long as it is a, drumroll, refractor telescope, you're going to be happy. So anything, you know, that's, I'd say 200 to 600 millimeters, that is a refractor telescope. You want to get at least a doublet is what you will see. You'll also see apochromatic refractor. You'll see, you know, does it have 2 lenses? Does it have 3 lenses? Does it have a field flattener? Does it have this? Does it have that? There's lots of accessories that you can go by, but the main thing is that you want to start with a refractor. And the reason for that is reflectors, Schmidt-Cassegrains, Max, they're a lot more complex than the refractor. Refractor is a very simple design. It's sealed. You got glass on one end and then either glass on the other end or a, you know, attached field flattener at the other end. There's no adjustments that need to be made. They generally have shorter focal lengths, which are a lot more forgiving to work with for long exposure photography. So focal length, if you don't know, is basically a measured distance of how far zoomed in you are on the night sky. So for a camera, for example, like a simple point and shoot camera, a 16 millimeter lens would be an extremely wide field of view. If you pointed a 16 millimeter lens up at the night sky, you would see, you know, nearly a third of the night sky in your one shot. So that's, you know, what I mean when I say focal length. So refractor telescopes, though, they get a lot closer than 16 millimeters. Generally, they're somewhere between, you know, 135 up to 600 millimeters. Mine, I have a SV Boney 80ED. Refractor telescope. It has a focal length of 448 millimeters when it's reduced. I think 450, right in that range, is just a wonderful spot to start for a beginner, because it gives you, just so many awesome targets that you can capture in the night sky. And you get up close and personal with those targets like the Orion Nebula, the Andromeda Galaxy, the Hart Nebula, you know, so many different types of awesome night sky objects that you can capture with a refractor with that focal length. It won't be so wide that you're, you know, wishing, man, I wish I could see it a little bit closer, but it's not so zoomed in to where guiding becomes very difficult and you have to absolutely nail your polar alignment and your balance, or you're going to have streaking stars and those sorts of things. So refractor telescope, that's what I'm going to recommend to you. If you want a specific recommendation, the Red Cat is a great series of refractors. I love SV Boney's line. I think they make great refractors. They have several different versions that are available now. Again, mine is the 80ED, and it has a field flattener that I purchased separately, which flattens out the field. It does what it says. It makes the stars sharp all the way throughout the image, throughout the corners and into the middle, which is something that when we talk about lenses at a later time can become an issue. Getting flat stars in the corners of your image. The corners, as we like to say, can be difficult. So yeah, refractor telescopes, that's going to be my recommendation for a beginner. And honestly, that's going to be any astronomer's recommendation to a beginner. You can't go wrong with a refractor. You truly can't. So we'll be back after the break here in just a few minutes, and then we're going to talk about the other few devices that you need to get a successful astrophotography rig running and what options you have to go with in regards to those. So again, my name is Rue, and you're listening to the AstroCast. Thanks so much, and we'll be right back. All right, so you've picked out an equatorial mount. You've picked out a telescope. Are you done yet? No, you are not. Unless you just want to put an eyepiece in that telescope and look at the moon or Jupiter, you're not really done yet. You need a camera. You absolutely need a camera. So you're also going to need something that you can capture all these things with. A computer is what you're going to need. Yeah, I got a lot of different options for what kind of computer you want to use. Do you want to use a laptop computer that you can, bring with you outside and set up beside your telescope and just plug everything into it? Do you want to get a small Raspberry Pi style device that will, mount up on the side of your tripod and stream everything to your phone? Do you want to maybe get a portable PC that you can, mount to your tripod perhaps, and then use your tablet or computer inside the house to monitor everything from? You have lots of different options that you can go with in this regard. So before we get into the computers too deep, though, let's talk about cameras. As far as options for getting started with astrophotography and cameras are concerned, you got a couple of different routes that you can go. DSLRs are still very popular to this day, although I'm finding it harder to recommend DSLRs as a starting medium for someone that wants to actually build an astrophotography rig. Now, the exception there is if you already own a DSLR camera. If you already own one, then you should absolutely be using that to learn the ins and outs of how this hobby works. And then, if you end up getting really into it and you get to the limitations of, not having a cooled camera, then maybe you step up to a, cooled camera for astrophotography. And when I say cooled camera, I mean literally that they put a fan and a heat sink on the camera because heat makes noise. And we are doing really long exposures over and over and over again, which causes the sensor to heat up, which causes noise, which is the number one enemy of all astrophotographers. We want images that aren't noisy. So most DSLR cameras, unfortunately, like particularly if it's hot in the summertime, they're going to give you a very noisy image. That being said, though, DSLR is a great option, low budget option, or if you already have one to get started with, you can use a simple T adapter to connect it to your telescope, to your refractor that we talked about earlier. or if you don't own a DSLR and maybe you don't quite have the budget yet to go out and buy, you know, a cooled astronomy camera quite yet, you could go on Cloudy Nights Classifieds, the Cloudy Nights website that I told you about earlier, and you could buy a used Astro modified Canon Rebel T5i for, you know, maybe $200-$300, and that will absolutely get you started. So when I say Astro modified, that is an important distinction to make, and I want to briefly touch on what that is and what that means, because you might see it in a lot of different places. And basically what an Astro modified camera has, or doesn't have, rather, would be a more accurate way to put it, that a regular camera does have, is an IR cut sensor. So to Astro modify a camera, basically it involves taking apart the camera and removing an infrared cut sensor that is built on top of the sensor of the camera. So by removing that, you're able to let in a lot more of the red color emissions that come from certain nebula that you'll definitely want to get in your astrophotography shots. So there are people out there who specialize in these surgeries for cameras, if you will. If you're really technically skilled and have very steady hands and know how to follow instructions, you can do it yourself at home. I personally didn't feel comfortable doing it myself, and I'm a very handy person and generally do stuff like that by myself, but I only had one DSLR at the time and I did not have money to replace it if something went wrong. And on top of that, it was a shared family camera, so I wasn't ready to, you know, take it apart. So what I did when I got started is I went on the Cloudy Nights forum, and for about $200 I found a used Canon Rebel T3i, which worked great for the first 6 months of my journey. It let me learn all the basics while I was out at a church parking lot learning how to do astrophotography. And then after about 6 months, I upgraded to what my next suggestion will be, which is a cold astronomy camera. Specifically, I went with the ZWO ASI 294 MC Pro. And that is very common for astronomy and astrophotography stuff to have really long, silly sounding names. Don't ask me why they don't just call it something else. I know the sensor type is generally in the name of the product. In this case, I think a Z294 sensor or whatever it's called from Sony is what's used. But it was a great camera. It was within my budget. I think I paid right at about $1,000 for it when it was brand new. And it's a one-shot color camera, which is a big distinction to make. You can also get a mono astronomy camera. I am not going to recommend that for a beginner because I don't think it's a good idea for a brand new beginner to start with a mono camera for a multitude of reasons that we can get into at a later time. But that one-shot color camera is going to give you a much better image, generally speaking, than most DSLRs will, because it is a cooled sensor and therefore is going to have significantly less noise than the DSLR will. So to recap, for your camera, what you're going to want is either a DSLR. I would recommend that if you already have one, go ahead and use that. Your existing camera, it makes sense to use it. If you don't, I would recommend buying a dedicated cooled astronomy camera. You know, you are going to spend $800 to $1,500, even as high as $2,000 or $3,000 if you want to. You know, with astrophotography, the sky's the limit. If you're willing to spend it, someone probably makes it for that much. But you can get amazing, beautiful images with, you know, an $800 to $1,000 camera like the 294 MC Pro. So don't feel like you need to go out and buy a $3,000 camera to get started. You do not. The $800 to $1,000 camera will get you incredible results and will generally be something that you can grow into for years to come. So that's going to be my recommendation for cameras. And when we come back, we will discuss the final other little accessories that you need to start your astrophotography journey. My name is Rue. You're listening to the AstroCast. Thanks again. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the AstroCast. I am your host, Rue, and today we are talking about a beginner astrophotography setup and what all goes into building such a setup. So far today, we have covered an equatorial mount, we have covered refractor telescopes, and we have also talked about imaging cameras. So those are your three biggest components, and they're going to be your priciest components of the build. But there are still several things left that if you want to have a really nice build, you'll want to go ahead and get. I'm going to cover what I consider to be mandatory, and then I'm going to throw in a few optional parts at the end as well. So, starting off, one thing I would highly recommend that technically is not necessary is going to be a guiding system. So auto guiding is a feature that we can use with equatorial mounts that makes several very minute adjustments to your equatorial mount in both the right ascension and declination axes to correct for any unwanted movement while the Earth is rotating. So basically, in practice, what this does is it takes, you know, what would be a 30-second exposure without getting any streaking stars and allows you to take a 3-minute exposure, a 5-minute, 10-minute. I mean, really, if you've got a really good equatorial mount and your polar alignment is well done and you've got really good guiding, you can indefinitely expose as long as you want. I've seen people, you know, that take a 60-minute exposure and have sharp stars. So certainly possible to do. So in order to have auto guiding, there are a few components that you're going to need. The two big ones are going to be a guide scope and a guide camera. So what is a guide scope? Okay, so basically in its simplest form, it is a smaller, generally, telescope that sits on top or to the side of your main imaging telescope, and it has its own camera on the back of that guide scope that sends the information that is needed to the computer that you're using to make those corrections. So think of it as your main telescope is taking all the pictures, and then your guide scope is reading the map and giving directions to the computer. So we need to have these on two separate processes, although there are some, you know, newer cameras out there that actually have a guide sensor built into the main camera. So they'll have two sensors built in. I know ZWO is making one right now, but I'm not going to get into that because I don't think that's something a beginner should be using necessarily. So what I would recommend for a basic guiding setup for what we've discussed today so far as a refractor telescope that's, you know, anywhere from 200 to 600 millimeters in focal length is going to be the SV Boney 50 millimeter guide scope, and that's for the scope. And the camera I'm going to recommend is going to be the ASI 120 mm mini. This is a fantastic guide camera. It's not too expensive. I believe you can get one for around $120 if I'm not mistaken, and it'll pair perfectly well with that SV Boney 50 millimeter guide scope. So you get those two, you're going to put the camera into the guide scope and then mount it on top of your main telescope, and that's going to send all those, you know, important directions to your computer. Now that is kind of the last big component that we need for our astrophotography rig, is the computer that kind of puts everything together for you. So there are many different ways you can go here. I'm going to name the two most common methods that I see. This is by no means an extensive or comprehensive list. These are just the two easiest ways to get started that I generally see happening with astrophotography. I have used both myself and can recommend both wholeheartedly. Just depends on which way you want to go. So the first option would be to just simply have a Windows laptop, and when you go outside with your telescope, go ahead and plug in your equatorial mounts USB, your camera USB, your guide camera USB. You want to plug all of that into a USB hub that goes directly into your laptop. From there, you can use software like Nina or Astrophotography Tool or a combination of various applications to run your astrophotography rig. Now, I'm not going to get into the specifics of the software today because this talk is more about hardware. So that is your first option, would be, you know, a laptop computer. You could even set up a like a mini desktop computer. A lot of people will do that, and they'll plug everything in, and then they will remote in to that mini desktop computer from the comfort of their home. So that is certainly an option as well. Now, option two, which is going to be what I would recommend to a beginner, is going to be a tool called the ASI Air. This is a basically a Raspberry Pi based computer, so a very small computer that has four 12 volt power outputs and four USB inputs. Depending on which model you get, they could be USB 2.0 or 3.0 or a mix of both. And then it also has a micro SD card for saving images to, and it also, you know, runs the software on the ASI Air. The reason that I recommend this over a computer or laptop is the simplicity of it. The ASI Air really does combine every tool that you need to take excellent astrophotography images into one simple setup and one app. When you're doing it on your computer as a beginner, it can be very frustrating because you have to get a whole litany of tools and drivers to work together in sync. When I first started learning, I used my laptop, and it took me several weeks before I was able to successfully image because it seemed like every time that I went out, I ran into a new issue. I'm glad, looking back in retrospect, that I did it that way. But I am a very persistent person, and I know that a lot of people might get frustrated and give up if they're running into those problems over and over again and end up putting their telescope in the closet or selling it. And I definitely don't want that to happen. So what I would recommend would be the ASI Air, just because it simplifies everything. Instead of running six different applications on your laptop computer, you just run one app on your smartphone or your tablet, and then you can control the entire rig, cameras, guiding, which target you want to go to, plate solving. Everything is done from that one app, and it is super easy and intuitive to use. It'll take you, 10 minutes of watching a YouTube video to figure out how it works, and then Bob's your uncle as far as that's concerned. So ASI Air pricing is anywhere from $200 to $300, depending on which model you get. I believe the Mini is still $199, and then the ASI Air Plus is $299. And then I know they have an even newer model out. I have not gotten that one yet. I'm not sure if it's more expensive, but look up the ASI Air. You can get those at, I believe, High Point Scientific sells them, if I'm not mistaken. But if you just Google it, you'll find plenty of shops that are selling them. So for $200, the Mini is great. I own one of those myself, and I run it on my Star Adventure GTI rig. I don't really see any big downsides between the Mini and the regular ASI Air. I save everything to a USB flash stick, so I don't care that it doesn't have as much internal storage because it's so much quicker for me to just pull out the thumb drive and plug that into my computer when I'm ready to edit my photos. So that's what I would recommend. So all of that said, there are a few little accessories and things that you don't necessarily have to have, but I would highly recommend having. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about those. My name is Rue. You're listening to the Astrocast, and we'll be right back. Thanks. Welcome back to the Astrocast. This is your host, Rue. Today we're talking about a beginner building an astrophotography rig and what all goes into it as far as components are concerned. We have covered equatorial mounts. We have covered the telescope. We've covered imaging camera. We've covered guide camera, guide scope, and computers. Now there are just a few not too expensive pieces left, and you will be off to the races in imaging. So the first thing I want to touch on are dew heaters. So what is a dew heater? A dew heater is basically a piece of cloth that wraps around your telescope where the lens is, and it warms up to a set temperature and stays there. This is important because it prevents your scope from fogging up or getting condensation on it, which can ruin a whole night's imaging. And believe me, it has for me before. So you're definitely going to want a dew heater. When I initially started, I only had one running on my main imaging scope, and it worked quite well, depending on what time of year it was. But then when it started getting cold outside, I started having, issues with fogging up on my guide camera. And that's when I added a second dew heater to the guide scope. So you can get these dew heaters very inexpensive. This is one of the few things I would say you can go on Amazon and buy, because it doesn't make sense to buy, high-end astrophotography dew heaters. If you're a beginner and just getting started, it's perfectly fine to get a $20 dew heater off of Amazon, and that's going to get the job done for you. So for that, I would recommend, just go to Amazon, search for dew heater, and I believe the ones I found were about $20. I know SV Boney makes some, and then other companies make them as well. So as long as it's, USB, you can plug it into your ASI Air, or you can plug it in to a surge protector, whatever you prefer, and then just make sure you turn them on. That's something a lot of people forget. They forget to turn on their dew heaters, and then their lens fogs up and they notice it the next day, and it's a big problem. So that is an excellent recommendation, would be two dew heaters, one for the guide scope and one for your main imaging scope. Now, beyond that, there is one other thing that we haven't talked about yet that's going to be just crucial to making sure that you get good images, and that is focusing your telescope. So there are a few different ways that you can go about this. So your telescope's going to come with a built-in focuser, and most refractor telescopes have, pretty nice 10-to-1, I believe they're called, Crayford focusers that work very well for making fine adjustments and, making sure that you can get really sharp pinpoint stars in your image. But eyeballing these stars is a very difficult thing to do, and most people are not successful when they try to just eyeball it and get the star as small as possible. So with that being said, there are two different ways that you can go. There is an inexpensive route, and that would be getting a Batinov mask. And this is essentially like a cap that you put on the end of your telescope, but it has slits cut out in it, and this causes the light to refract when it enters your telescope, and it basically puts an X over every star that you see. So you're going to take a picture with the Batinov mask on, and you're going to focus it until you get it close enough, and then you'll see a cross going over your star. And then once you have that cross evenly spaced across the star to where it's, perfectly symmetrical on both sides, then you know that you're in perfect focus. So Batinov mask, very inexpensive. If you have a 3D printer, you can actually make your own. There are a lot of plans online that you can download for, different size telescopes to make your own Batinov mask. I don't have a 3D printer myself, so I ordered one online for one of the lenses that I use, and it works very well. It's super easy to use, and it's great. Now, there is another route that you can go. It's a little bit more expensive, but it is much easier to use, and you can automate it, which is nice, and we'll talk about why in a minute. But that would be an electronic autofocuser. So there are a few different companies that make electronic autofocusers. I personally own the ZWO EAF, and it basically replaces one of the knobs on my existing focuser on my telescope with a small box with a motor built into it that can adjust the focus up and down. And what's great about that is it ties into the ASI Air that we discussed earlier, and you can fully automate the focusing process. So there's basically an autofocus button that you can press within the app, and then it'll run, a 3-minute script for adjusting the size of the stars until it gets them as small as possible, and then you're good to go. Another wonderful thing about it is they actually come with a temperature sensor. So something that a lot of people don't think about is, if the night gets colder or warmer as time gets on, that can cause the metal to expand or contract in your telescope, which in turn causes the focus to change. So you might have bigger or smaller stars as the night wears on. With the electronic autofocuser, it can tell when the temperature has changed by whatever amount that you set. I think by default it's 10 degrees, if I'm not mistaken, and it will automatically pause your plan and refocus your stars. So that way you're sure that, you know, all night long you've got the sharpest stars possible. Whereas if you're using a Batinov mask, you kind of need to pay attention to your stars. And, you know, if you see that they're, you know, not as sharp as they were when you first started, you need to put the Batinov mask back on and refocus, and then you're good to go. So Batinov mask, I say $20. Electronic autofocuser, about $200, if I'm not mistaken. So definitely a big cost delta between those two. I think a lot of people do end up getting an electronic autofocuser just because it really does save a lot of time, and it's just so easy to use, and it's just one less thing to worry about. And astrophotography is one of those things where you want to, you know, eliminate as many problems as you can, even if it costs a little bit of money. You just want to simplify things and get it to where all you really have to think about is your art. So that's what I'm going to recommend, would be the electronic autofocuser. If you don't have the money for it, completely understandable. It's one of those things that you can absolutely add on later. When I started, I used a Batinov mask for the first 6 months or so, and then I eventually added on an electronic autofocuser, and you can certainly do that too. So after we come back from the break, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode, but we got just a few other little bonus items that I wanted to mention before we go. And I am your host, Rue. You're listening to the AstroCast, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to the AstroCast. I am your host, Rue. I really appreciate anyone who has made it this far through our inaugural first episode. I'm so thankful for you joining me and listening to me blab on for a whole hour about beginner setups for astrophotography. I hope this has, you know, been of use to you. And if you enjoyed the episode, and if you're interested to see what else we have coming down the road, I would really appreciate it if you would subscribe to the show and, you know, share it with any, you know, fellow astrophotographers or budding astronomers that you may know, because if we can get more listeners, I'll be able to bring more guests on, we'll be able to talk about more interesting topics, and, you know, things can just take off from there. So we've covered today a beginner setup for the budding astrophotographer, and I just had a couple of extra optional, you know, pieces that you don't necessarily need to get started, but they're really good to have. So the first one would be a surge protector with USB ports built into it. I noticed pretty early on that I filled up my ASI Air with the guide camera, the main camera, the USB port, and I didn't have enough room left to plug in the USB for my dew heater. So by getting a small square surge protector that has, you know, 4 AC outlets and 4 USB ports on it, I'm able to plug in those dew heaters directly into that surge protector and not have to worry about it. The second thing would be cable ties. This is, you know, I say it's optional, but really you need cable ties. They're so inexpensive, and cable management is very important when you're setting up your first rig. You want to make sure that anywhere that a cable can be tucked away, it is tucked away, because what can happen is they can get caught in the wind and cause, you know, your guiding to get off balance, and then your images aren't sharp. And if you can avoid all of that by, you know, spending 10 cents a piece on a cable tie, then that's worth doing. Another great thing to have is going to be microfiber cloths. You can get, you know, a 10 pack on Amazon of microfiber cloths for next to nothing. These come in wonderfully handy for wiping down your objective lens, cleaning off, you know, various parts, anything that's glass on your imaging train. You know, a microfiber cloth will go a long way to making it great. Another thing I like to have that you don't hear a lot of people mention is a set of M screws, so like metric screws. I got one of these early on. It's a set of various sizes that start from really small to rather large. You know, it's come in handy so many times. It's good to have extra screws laying around for, you know, if you need to attach something or readjust something and you don't have the right size screw, that can come in super handy. And then finally, a flat panel. This is something that, you know, a lot of people don't think about until later on in the journey, because you get started and you're not worrying about calibration frames, which is an issue that we'll get into in another episode. But you can buy a simple trace sketch pad light on Amazon for about $20. If you just look up TracePad on Amazon, you can find one for $20 that you can sit on top of your telescope and take your flat calibration images with. And that is an invaluable tool. It'll make all of your images look better when you're done processing them. And it's just a great thing to have. So highly recommend getting a flat panel. Again, not something that you necessarily have to have right away, but it's a very nice to have item. So I believe that pretty much covers everything that I can think of that you would need to have a beginner astrophotography setup. So that pretty much wraps it up for our first episode. So just a few quick words before I leave. I just want you to know that I do have some great plans for future guests that will be joining the show. I have a lot of friends in the astrophotography community, and I will be knocking on their metaphorical doors to ask if they would like to come and, you know, co-host an episode or two with me. And I'm also considering looking for a permanent co-host for the show as well to join me weekly on this podcast as we, you know, dive into various topics, astronomy and astrophotography related. If that is something that you or someone you know might be interested in, please feel free to send me an email. My email address is going to be roo@qcroo.com. I'll spell that out. That is R-O-O at Q as in queen, C as in city, ROO.com. Again, that's roo@qcroo.com. And if you could just email me a name, any information about them, their background, a resume, if you like, I'll be happy to look it over. And, you know, if we can work it out and you're somebody who might work well for this co-host spot, then we can certainly talk about that. So I thank you again so much for tuning into the first episode of the Astrocast. And I can't wait to record episode number two, which I've already got planned out. And check back with us next week. Go ahead and subscribe, and we'll be ready to rock and roll. You've been listening to the Astrocast with your host, Rue. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day. Clear skies.